Good morning and welcome to Beyond the Gates, How Erdic Research Affects You. I'm Annette Kirkland and I'm here today with Dr. Keith Martin. He's a research physicist with the Coastal and Hydraulics Laboratory at Erdic. And we're going to talk about ship simulators, virtual vessels in a virtual world. Good morning, Dr. Martin.
Good morning, Annette.
How are you this morning?
I'm doing pretty good.
Great. Well, thank you so much for being here. And we're going to talk about a lot of fun stuff today. And the first thing we're going to say is, well, I say, we're going to ask is, what is your role at Erdic?
I'm the technical lead for the ship simulator at Erdic at the Coastal and Hydraulics Laboratory, which means I lead a team of engineers who run the simulator for various projects.
Okay. Well, tell me about yourself and your background, and what steps did you take to get where you are, and what is your relationship with the community?
To get where I got, I don't think anybody ever thinks they're going to be doing ship simulation when they're in school. I mean, especially I got 2 degrees in physics, and I really didn't know what I wanted to do.
If you could see yourself as a little kid behind a ship thing, that would be like cool, right? Going, this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to pretend to drive ships.
Yeah. But I actually started out writing code at Erdic.
Okay.
So I was writing code for a program, and then I morphed into doing numerical modeling at CHL. And then somebody came in one day and said, hey, you know, the guy from ship simulation is going to retire soon, and we'd like to backfill. Would you be interested in looking at that? And 10 years later, here I am.
So 10 years later. Okay. Great. Well, so what is the ship simulator, and can you describe it for our listeners?
I mean, it's a room that has like 11 screens, and the screens are 65-inch screens turned up on end, butted up against each other, and basically in a semicircle. So, I mean, kind of think about you're standing inside a circle, and then, you know, your peripheral vision is filled up with those screens. So you have screens in front of you and all the way around, almost behind you.
Wow.
And then you have bridge controls. There's a table that has the rudders and the throttles and those kinds of things, and that's right in front of you for your, you know, so you can reach out and steer the ship or give it more power, less power, what have you.
Okay, that's a lot of screens.
It is a lot of screens, and we're about to upgrade those screens.
Okay, really?
The screens are about 10 years old. They're plasmas, which is definitely old technology.
Right.
They're starting to show their age. And so in the next few months, we'll get a full upgrade to LEDs. Mm-hmm. And then one of the bridges will actually upgrade not just the screens, but then they're going to add screens, and it'll be fully 360. So now imagine you're surrounded by screens.
Wow. That's not overwhelming at all. So anyway, okay, so what are the benefits obtained from using the ship simulator?
So the great thing about a simulator, you know, is that nothing, you know, it's virtual, so you don't run into anything, people don't fall off the ship, what have you. And so you can test a lot of things without doing any damage to anything. Mm-hmm. So whether it's to another ship or whether it's to the environment, and it doesn't cost very much. I mean, you know, you're talking about ships that are 1,100 feet long, 150 feet wide, drafting 45 feet, which means they stick down to the water 45 feet. So, I mean, right. You really don't want to practice a design with the actual ship. You want to figure things out in the virtual world first.
Right.
So, you know, and it has all the physics. So the pilot that we bring in, he is experiencing the ship as it would actually move in time if he were in his regular job. So, which is key to helping him give us feedback on whether or not, you know, we've provided him a design that is adequate.
Okay. Well, what components are part of the Erdic ship simulator?
So you've got the equipment that we talked about earlier, but you've also got, you know, there's databases. The visual databases, which is what you see, that's what's on the screens. And while that's important, it's probably one of the lesser important things. So if you go in and you look at the visuals for, say, Charleston Harbor, mm-hmm. If you'd been to Charleston, you might say, well, you're missing quite a few things here in Charleston. Well, that's true. But we don't get paid to do an art project. We put just enough in the visual so that the pilot knows he's in Charleston.
Okay.
The more important databases are the ones that control the physics. So you have the numerical model, which generates the currents, and that comes from another engineer, usually inside of CHL. Mm-hmm. And those are actually validated to gauge data or data that we go out and collect, but they're validated so we know those currents actually represent the existing world. And then those are put in the simulator. And the last piece is the vessel model itself. So that's, you know, and we say vessel model, it's a computer file that describes a ship and not just the length, the beam, or the draft, but also how that ship responds to other forces, how it responds to current, how it responds to other ships, how it responds to wind, how it responds to banks. Some people might not know this, and it's not something that I really ever thought about, is that if you push a ship that's drafting, you know, when we say drafting 45 feet, generally they dig a channel and they will, the ships will come in as deep as they can come in, which means you can hold up a piece of paper and that's about how much space is between the bottom of the ship and the bottom of the channel.
Wow.
So when you do that, though, you're squeezing the water, uh-huh, and you make the water go a lot faster. And when you do that, then there's this pressure drop. When you get a pressure drop, that allows the ship to sink down into the water. Well, the same thing happens when you get too close to the bank. You get too close to the bank, you squeeze the water, and now the water starts to go faster. And so it might push the bow away, the front end of the ship away, but then the speed of the water on the backside causes the back end, the stern, to suck into the bank.
Wow.
But that's in the simulator.
Right, right.
So it's those are the, and I've probably gone way off in the weeds, but that's
no,
kind of, that's,
we want you to.
So that's where the databases, that's where those, you know, those databases, you know, the bathymetry has to be right, the depths, the currents, the ship, all that has to be correct.
Right, right. No, that's quite fascinating. So what kind of challenges does the simulator help engineers and ship pilots overcome?
So there's two main things that the simulator helps with. One is obviously money. So we're trying to optimize the design. We don't want to, I mean, you can dig a channel really huge and you can bring any ship you want in it. That may be overdoing it. And so we spent too much money. And so we're supposed to be stewards of the taxpayers' money. Mm-hmm. So we want to optimize that design so that it fits within our budget. The other piece though is safety. So it's great to save as much money as possible, but if the pilots say, well, this isn't safe, I wouldn't use this channel, then we've not gained anything.
Right.
So, you know, that safety sometimes can be a little bit subjective, just because, you know, you may look at a track plot. A track plot is a picture of a ship's passing in time. So it's ship shapes of how the ship made the transit. Mm-hmm. And so you may look at those two ships that passed each other and say, hey, those ships didn't touch. That was a success. But you go and read the pilot's comments about that, and the pilot said, I would have never have done this in real life. We were only 50 feet apart. You know, we were getting sucked together. It was all I could do not to hit the other guy. Uh-huh. And so you realize that, you know, it's not as simple as all that. And that's the other thing. We got a question one time from from someone on the land side. I said, well, wait a second, they don't do this for highways. I said, well, I said, does the highway move out from under you?
Hopefully not.
does your car traditionally get blown off the road if the wind comes up? Well, no.
Right.
I said, so you add those two things, plus the fact the ships can get sucked together and other kinds of things. I mean, the pilot's dealing with a lot, and so it's important that we look at these things in the simulator first.
Right, exactly. Coming from all around.
Yeah, so ship simulation is really a unique way to solve an engineering problem. Think, if you will, for a moment about, say you're going to build a building for Google. The CEO of Google, you wouldn't go to him and say, hey, what kind of steel girder should we use in your building? He pretty much doesn't care. And more importantly, he's not really qualified to tell you.
Right.
The difference with ship simulation is a pilot is. You know, a pilot uses Charleston Harbor, they use San Francisco Harbor or Galveston Bay, they use it every single day. They know how their ship responds to the various conditions in those harbors and whatnot. They know how it responds to other ships. And so they're intimately qualified to give you feedback on how well the design works with the type of ships that they bring in. So it's very important to have their feedback and their input on a design.
Because they've probably had hours and hours and hours of ship time.
Right. I mean, you talk about a ship pilot. So ship pilots are, they don't just come out to go get a 4-year degree and all of a sudden out pops a ship pilot.
Right.
They usually go to a maritime university, so they get a four-year degree, but then they go to sea for probably, you know, 8-10 years. And so they're probably in their 30s, and then they have to sit for an exam. And so they sit for an exam, and it's based on that port. You know, you can't, if you sit for the exam and you pass it in Charleston, doesn't mean you can be a pilot in New York. I mean, so you you have to pass the exam for Charleston.
Right.
And then you reproduce the nav chart, the navigation chart, from memory. They give you an outline of the harbor, and then you have to write in everything else that goes in there. So if you see a nav chart, you know there's a lot on it. They have to produce everything from memory. So they know everything about that.
Wow.
Again, making them very intimately qualified to comment on, is this ship design safe?
Okay. So what are some types of ships and vessels that are portrayed by the simulation?
So, I mean, ones people here in Vicksburg are familiar with would be like towboats, barges. We do large container ships. So the ships that carry, I mean, basically think of an 18-wheeler box. Well, you've seen those ships in the movies and the TV shows, you know, container ships. Bulkers, which are usually, you know, dry goods, what have you, like coal or things like that, or maybe tankers carrying fuel or liquefied natural gas carriers, tugboats, and so tugboats actually help the big ships move, and so they'll actually push or pull a ship to help him make a maneuver. So we have those, and we have even have some military vessels. So
okay,
and it's a project by project thing. So I mean we build ships or obtain ship models based on what the project requires.
I'm Annette Kirkland. Beyond the Gates continues in a moment. You're listening to News Talk 107.7.
Hi, everyone. Champions of Health here. COVID-19 is still around, and with cases increasing, we would like to remind you to stay vigilant when it comes to health and well-being. Symptoms of the new Omicron subvariant include but are not limited to runny nose, cough, sore throat, fever, headaches, muscle pain, and fatigue. If you are displaying any of these symptoms or have been exposed, please get tested and follow your doctor's guidelines on isolation. Let's keep our germs to ourselves. Project Champions is funded by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services Office of Minority Health.
Dad, the bank sign looks different.
Yeah, Bancorp South and Cadence came together. It's one bank now, bigger and even better.
Cool.
You mean it's lit because the sign's lit up?
Good one, Dad.
Bancorp South and Cadence Bank have come together to form a new, even better bank to help the people, companies, and communities we serve prosper. The new Cadence Bank, helping opportunity take shape. Learn more at cadencebank.com/the new cadence. Member FDIC.
Welcome back to Beyond the Gates. You're listening to News Talk 107.7. So if you're just tuning in, I am speaking with Dr. Keith Martin. He's a research physicist with the Coastal and Hydraulics Laboratory at ERDC, and we're talking about the ship simulator, virtual vessels in a virtual world. How accurate are the conditions on the simulator for the technology to portray real-time issues?
They're pretty accurate. I mean, and some of the we base that on is what we get back from the pilots. Mm-hmm. So they're the ones that can tell you whether their ship is handling correctly, whether it's responding to wind or current or what have you correctly. But at the end of the day, it is still a model.
Right.
So it's not going to be exact. So say, for instance, squat. And so squat was that the condition I described earlier where the pressure drop under the ship and the ship drops down in the water further. So a lot of times that calculation, so the simulator is rather conservative, and so the ship squats more than it's supposed to.
Okay.
So and some of the, there's and it doesn't, like I said, it's a model, it doesn't cover everything. So on the inland waterways, you know, we have tugging barges coming into a lock. Mm-hmm. And so you're pushing that barge into that lock. Well, that water has to go somewhere. And so the vessel does not affect the water. The water affects the vessel in the simulator. So that water is not getting pushed inside the simulator because that would be a real-time calculation.
Right.
And so the calculations we use to create the currents for the simulator are run on the supercomputer. So we don't really have the capacity to hook the supercomputer up to the simulator and make those calculations. And we were looking at research to do that in a smaller way, we call reduced order modeling, but right now that's not done.
Okay.
So there's other things. I mean, so like with, think about, you know, ship simulators were developed for big ships. And so they were developed for open water, deep water. And so anything with regard to wave fields and wave models is based on that. if you want to look at something more like in near the shore, if you're bringing a craft in for, say, the military or something, and you want to come into the shore, well, those wave fields are different because it's shallow water. Mm-hmm. And so the bottom affects those waves. And so that's not in a simulator. Okay. So, there's limitations.
Gotcha. Yeah, and the water outside right now in the river is a little low, isn't it?
It is.
That would be a weird simulation right now. So if I remember correctly, there's a lot of different places across the world that you can pull up and simulate. So what are those areas and why were they chosen?
So everything's based on projects, based on what the Corps of Engineers needs. So they come to us. So we've got Charleston Harbor. We've got San Francisco Harbor. We've got Seattle, New York, Baltimore, Norfolk. Houston Ship Channel, Lake Charles. But everything we do, we build. So that's the other thing to understand is that we build everything. I mean, we start with the software that we have that came from a manufacturer, mm-hmm. but then we build the visuals. We're starting to build our own ships. We do the numerical modeling. So everything is what, built on what our sponsor needs. Mm-hmm. So yeah, there's a wide range. I mean, I've got a long list of databases. I've got databases in Alaska and Puerto Rico and Honolulu, but these were all based on projects that we were asked to do. So, it's just basically on a case by case basis. It's not, oh, you've got a ship simulator. You must have every harbor in the country. No, we
pull didn't. Up so and so.
Right.
Well, somebody I was talking to, they vividly remembered Alcatraz.
Yes, that was in San Francisco Harbor.
Okay. So that I think that stood out to them a lot of all that and what was done with.
And that was a visual that was developed by the manufacturer.
Okay.
So every building, every tree, I mean, it's very detailed. It's like, oh, wow, this is so awesome. you see, when we build, there's not quite that much there.
Okay, gotcha.
So, we don't have every single harbor waterway in our database. We've been doing this for 40 years, so we have simulated every waterway or harbor you can think of in the United States, including, Alaska, Hawaii, and Puerto Rico. But technology has changed a lot. When we started in the 1980s, I'm not even sure if Windows wasn't even a thing in the 1980s. So the databases, they're not forward compatible, if you will.
It was DOS, wasn't it? I mean,
yeah, I think it was. So, mm-hmm. We don't have all those databases. We have the reports from those times. So, I mean, we could probably go back and reproduce something, but we'd have to essentially start from scratch. Mm-hmm. So, but, again, we've been doing this a long time, and that's kind of what makes us unique in that, you can go into, there's other simulators besides Erdic. There's simulators down in Fort Lauderdale at Star Center, Siemens Church in Houston. I mean, there's a few simulators out there, but they're for training mariners, mm-hmm. Not us. Right. None of us are mariners. Not right qualified to train mariners, but the channel design piece—that's what we do, and we've been doing for 40 years. And so, mm-hmm. The other simulators—they're great at training mariners, and that's what they should do. And I should keep doing what I'm doing because and it's kind of it's that whole thing with Erdic as well. That's the other thing that makes Erdic so powerful, is that information and knowledge and experience are handed down. When somebody new comes in from the outside, either formally or informally, they're assigned a mentor. Mm-hmm. And, they learn from that person. They learn from others. I mean, I've had more than mentors than I can count. But that's how things progress. And that keeps getting handed down. And that's why Erdic keeps, Erdic is always growing, mm-hmm. Even if you can't see it.
Right. Well, engineers and researchers have used the Erdic ship tow simulator to optimize navigation channels and conduct research for harbors and waterways throughout the United States. What are some success stories?
Charleston's probably one of the biggest success stories, and that was a few years back. But, everything, when you talk about a project, oftentimes the sponsor will come in with, well, I have these three different alternatives for this one item, whether it's a channel, a bend or a turning basin. In this case, it was turning basins. And so they had three different options for the turning basin. So if you're looking at a piece of paper and draw the outline of a turning basin, just draw the shape of a stop sign, I guess I would say. Mm-hmm. And so call that your turning basin. Well, it's got a certain diameter to it. And so the turning basin at Charleston had a certain diameter. And so they said, well, let's just deepen that turning basin. Let's not mess with the horizontal dimensions. Mm-hmm. And then the next alternative two was, let's make the horizontal dimensions a little bigger. Let's make that stop sign or that circle a little bigger and deepen that. Mm-hmm. And the last one was a maximum. And let's deepen it some maximum dimension and deepen that. Well, the first two we found out didn't work with the pilots because they would either run aground mm-hmm. or the ship would get too close to a ship that was on the dock right next to the turning basin. And so the last one was, for lack of a better term, too easy. I mean, they had plenty of space. Mm-hmm. Well, that's the other thing about the simulator, which is unique, is that you don't just have the pilots there. You have the people there that design the channel. You have your stakeholders, in this case, the Port of Charleston. They're all at the simulator while these exercises are being conducted. And so once we determined that was kind of too easy, if you will, we sat down with all these stakeholders and said, well, what if we went in and split the difference? We took the biggest one that didn't work, alternative two, mm-hmm. and the alternative three, and split the difference between those two and made some intermediate increase in size. And so everybody kind of agreed to that. And so we went into the simulator and kind of we moved buoys. We couldn't rerun the currents, but we could move buoys. And so we moved buoys to represent that size and then tested that over several days. And everybody agreed that this works. The policy did this is safe. We'll use it. Well, that one change, because we had two different turning basins that we did that with, that one change probably conservatively saved the government $10 million just construction costs.
Wow. That's fantastic. That's a good success story. Well, so how many team members and partners are part of the ship simulator project, and what are their roles?
Oh, wow. So, and we're kind of in a state of flux. I mean, you know, it's, you know how hard it is. People come in, they do stuff for a while. Sometimes they said, oh, I'd like to try that. And, you know, so you have that. So we ebb and flow. Right now, let's see, I'm counting off my head. There's probably six or seven of us right now.
Okay.
And it varies. I mean, so simulation is not constrained to one discipline or another. So we have civil engineers, we have mechanical engineers, we have an aerospace engineer, we have a computer scientist.
Okay.
And of course, I'm a physicist.
Right. So,
you know, and they do different things. I mean, so we, all of us at one time or another lead a project, but then somebody has to develop the visuals, mm-hmm. Somebody has to develop the other files that go with it. So you have the radar or the electronic charting, what have you. And, of course, now the vessel model. So we're learning to build vessel models. So somebody has to do that. So there's mm-hmm. it kind of – I think the roles rotate on a project-by-project basis.
Right.
So everybody kind of knows how to do everything.
Oh, good. Okay.
I'm Annette Kirkland. Beyond the Gates continues in a moment. You're listening to News Talk 107.7.
I'm Blake Teller.
I'm Philip Schrader.
And I'm Briggs Hobson. Our new law firm is Teller, Hobson, and Schrader. When you need legal assistance, remember, we're your local attorneys right here in Vicksburg. We're involved in our community, and we are here when you need help with your will or estate or a business or real estate matter or if you're in an accident. So for any legal service you may need, drop by our office at 1201 Cherry Street or call us at 601-636-6565. Teller, Hobson, and Schrader, attorneys at law.
The next time a power outage occurs, you can be ready thanks to Neal Gas. Vicksburg's locally owned and operated Neal Gas is now a master Cummins generator distributor. They sell, install, and service Cummins generators along with propane, tankless water heaters, propane fireplace systems, and infrared heaters, 24-hour emergency service too. And they offer several payment plans. Check them out online. Neal Gas. That's Neal with two L's. NealGas.com.
Welcome back to Beyond the Gates. You're listening to News Talk 107.7.
So if you're just tuning in, I am speaking with Dr. Keith Martin. He's a research physicist with the Coastal and Hydraulics Laboratory at ERDC, and we're talking about the ship simulator, virtual vessels in a virtual world. So what do you see for the future of the program?
Well, we have a new building coming.
I've heard about that.
We've been working for the military in some capacities, and so the Army decided that we were doing enough of that work that they were willing to fund building an entirely new building just for the military side of the program. So that's starting to grow. The other thing is we're looking at how can we push simulator technology further? Mm-hmm. So, you know, right now we have what's called off the shelf, you know, something you can go buy from manufacturer. We've obtained source code from another group that we've partnered with. It's actually a simulator software, but actually we have the code so we can look under the hood. Mm-hmm. And so can we add things like the piston effect in the lock and dam? Can we add virtual reality? So instead of having to have all these screens, can we put on a virtual reality headset and the visual be right there?
That would be cool.
Yeah. We've got a portable unit now. Mm-hmm. So, and I use that term very loosely because it's 10 Pelican cases. So it takes a box trailer.
Not very portable.
But it has its uses,
right?
Because you have smaller pilot associations, say like in Panama City, or Matagorda, Texas, or Brownsville, mm-hmm. where they have fewer than five pilots, and so pilots associations are essentially contractors to the port, mm-hmm. and so it affects their business if you take some of their employees to come up there and do work for you. So sometimes we need to take the simulator to them, and so that's what we do is we pack it up in a box trailer and we drive down to wherever and we run the simulations there.
Okay.
So, the source code, that's the really big deal. That's going to allow us to look at some things that we haven't looked at before. Can we look at that reduced order modeling inside of a lock? Can we look at near shore effects with landing craft for the military?
Right. This is, I know, not on our sheet, but I know my husband, when he goes out to collect all this data, is that used for what you do?
Yes.
Okay. All right. There's a connection there. When you said Brownsville, Texas, and all these other places, I was like, wait a minute, he's gone there. So I wonder if what he does has a lot to do with what you do.
So what they, and it's indirect in a way, because so what the field data collection team does is they go out and collect data that's used to validate the numerical models.
Okay.
And the numerical models are what generate the currents that go into the simulator.
Okay.
So, and we're getting ready to do one that the field data group went out and got for Cal and Adams Bayou.
Okay.
Which is part of the Sabine to Galveston project.
Okay.
And that's a flood protection project. So, think about, we got this barrier down in New Orleans, protects New Orleans. Well, they're looking to do the same kind of thing, build structures on Cow Bayou and Adams Bayou, put a wall between them, try to protect inland from storm surge.
Okay.
And so they sent a field crew down to collect the data for the water, and then we're doing the numerical modeling at CHL. I mean, no, I say we, I'm not. But, the field data collection absolutely is important for us.
Okay. Great. Like I said, it's cool to see the connection to all that. So when is the new building supposed to be finished? Good question.
We just had the design charrette 2 weeks ago.
Okay.
That's the initial charrette. So that's the initial, looking at the 10-15% design. Don't hold me to this, but I think they're looking at possibly the award for the contract to build maybe sometime towards the end of next year.
Okay.
So I would suspect that we wouldn't see a completed building until maybe end of calendar year 24.
Okay.
But that's purely guessing. I'm not in charge of that.
Hey, don't even worry about it. I've been told a long time ago, don't put dates on things. So I bet the kids, when they come, do you have tours that come?
We do.
And I bet they're just, their mouths are open. They're like, this is so cool. This is probably something I want to do when I grow up.
Some do. Some get a little green.
Do they really?
Yeah. When I said you're surrounded by screens, I mean, that's really true. I mean, once you get up to the bridge controls, mm-hmm. your peripheral vision can't see beyond the screens. So if we turn the waves up and you're seasick, you can get seasick, you will get seasick.
Wow. Okay. I don't need to come see you. So. Okay, because yes, I do have a problem with that motion sickness thing. So, but the building doesn't move, the poor you are, but it just, everything around you looks like it's moving.
Eyes convince you that the world is sideways.
Right. Well, gotcha. Okay. So what do you want listeners to remember from this valuable conversation?
Well, that's a tough question. Well, I should have read that a couple of times and thought about that. It's like anything else at ERIC. We do a lot of things at ERIC that most people don't know about, and day-to-day doesn't directly affect them, but in some ways it probably touches them. So, mm-hmm. you know, if you're putting on your Nikes or, you know, pulling something out of the closet to put on or, you know, maybe even getting a piece of fruit, you know, that probably came in on a ship.
Good
and
point.
If it came in on a ship, it came through a port. And if it came through a port, it's probably a port that we simulated.
Right.
So, which is kind of cool.
That's a very good point. So. And you have a lot to do with that. Well, Dr. Martin, thank you so much for being here. And we appreciate you and hope you come back again.
Absolutely.
Thank you for listening to Beyond the Gates. And we'll come back at you next week. Have a great day.
It's Bramika Smith here again with Elite Performance and Rehab on Mission 66. We're in the midst of the fall sports season. Kurt Cooksey, one of our staff physical therapists, is here to talk about a few tips to keep you off the bench this season.
Fall sports injuries are common, but they can be prevented when you plan ahead. Warming up properly before and stretching after a game or practice can prevent soreness and many sports injuries. Cross-train by playing different sports during the off-season or challenge yourself with different modes of exercise. Fuel your body properly with balanced meals and hydration. Be sure to rest. It is crucial to give your body a break to avoid burnout and the chance of injury. And don't forget to get adequate sleep.
As always, if an injury does occur, visit us at Elite Performance and Rehab on Mission 66 or give us a call at 601-638-5518.
Buy one, get one for a dollar at McDonald's. Mix and match a sausage biscuit, sausage McGriddles, or hash browns. Buy one, get one for a dollar at McDonald's. Or, as we like to call it, the can't have just one deal. Buy a sausage biscuit, get a second sausage biscuit for a dollar. Or mix and match. Buy a sausage biscuit, get a sausage McGriddles for a dollar. You can't have just one when the second one is just a dollar. Buy a McGriddles, get hash browns for a dollar. Buy hash browns, get a sausage biscuit for a dollar. Going on now at McDonald's.
Now News Talk 1490 and 107.7 FM presents the legendary Paul Harvey and the rest of the story. And now,
the rest of the story. Bruce had never had any trouble making up his mind. In fact, for somebody his age, he was uncommonly thorough, logical, and calculating. But this time, for the first time, he was overwhelmed with ambivalence. He was completely stumped. Bruce had just finished his first year of college. Summer was almost over. One of his options was to return for his sophomore year. The other option sounded like more fun, to become a professional water skier. And as far as Bruce was concerned, the choice was, well, a toss-up. Regarding the latter consideration, he was remarkably qualified. Three times he'd won the Eastern Water Skiing Championship. Subsequently has competed at national level. His opportunity to turn pro had come only recently when a friend who performed in a water skiing show in Florida invited Bruce to join the same outfit. The job promised decent money, fringe benefits, included plenty of sunshine and pretty girls, and best of all, Bruce would be doing something which he had always enjoyed and at which he had always excelled. On the other hand, there was his mother. His mother voted for college. There would always be time for water skiing, she reasoned, but in the long run, a college education was more important. Now, at this point, geography becomes significant in the rest of the story. You've already learned that the pro water skiing show was in Florida. Bruce's home and his college were both in Connecticut. But while Bruce was trying to make up his mind, he was neither in Connecticut nor in Florida. He was visiting friends who, as it turned out, lived almost precisely halfway between the two in Virginia. Now, imagine this. Bruce is putting his suitcases into his car. He's about to leave the Virginia home of his friends. He still has not reached a decision to spend his life water skiing or go on to college. In fact, he's out on the road now. The road leading to the interstate highway. He still has not decided whether he would head north to Connecticut in a college career or south to Florida and the life of a professional athlete. So ambivalent was Bruce regarding this choice, He was within sight of the interstate highway on-ramps. Still, he had not made up his mind. But what happened is this. Bruce was on the road approaching the highway. He was in the right-hand lane when a car pulled alongside him in the left lane. In order to get into the left lane, Bruce would have had to slow down and pull in behind the other car. So based solely on the prospect of that minor inconvenience, Bruce decided to stay in his own lane, which led to the northbound on-ramp, which in turn led to Connecticut and to college. Well, whoever that woman was in the car in the left-hand lane, it was she who made up Bruce's mind for him. It was she who unwittingly prevented a professional water skiing career for Bruce and returned him to college and to amateur athletics. How often in the years since then, Bruce has marveled at how different his life might have been had only that left lane been open that day. For as a professional, he could never again have participated in amateur sports, which means that he could not have entered the Olympics in 1976 to win the decathlon, to become the champion the whole world now recognizes as Bruce Jenner. And now you know the rest of the story.